And we're live. Welcome back, everyone, to the weekly episode of the Daycheck Podcast. As usual, I'm Frederick, your host, and I'm joined with Seth Wintraub. How are you doing, Seth?
Good. Stormy over here.
Yeah, it's the other way around this week.
Yeah,
here it's pretty much spring over here.
Yeah, if a tree comes down like during the podcast, you'll know why.
And as you can see, if you're watching live on YouTube, I have a little update on my setup here. Hopefully, it's an upgrade. I'm not so sure yet, but we'll see. So this week, we're going to start with actually a little podcast exclusive, since I haven't had time to write about it on Electrek yet, because I just came back from Mont-Tremblant, which is a chain of mountain here in Quebec, where there was a very cool electric vehicle unveiling. Not an electric vehicle that we're used to see, an electric snowmobile. So I drove up there yesterday for the unveiling. The company is named Taiga Motors. We reported on them last year during the last winter season, because they had a few of the prototype working with the a big resort in Whistler, and they've been working on to improve on that prototype and bring something to market. So that was the consumer version that they were unveiling yesterday, and it's a very cool vehicle, because if you're not very familiar with the world of snowmobiles, they're extremely polluting, both with emissions but also with noise. Like, they're very noisy, but in terms of emission, there's practically no regulation right now for snowmobiles. So with the two-stroke engine, they're just crazy emission that they're emitting. And Taiga said 50 times car, like an average car, which I haven't verified yet, but I wouldn't be exactly surprised by it. So there's really an opportunity here to have an impact, even though, of course, like, snowmobile is not a huge market. And of course, you can also use the electric powertrain, the advantage of electric powertrain, to bring into a winter power sport. And that's like we saw back when we tested the Nikola ATV, UTV back in Utah a few months back. And there's really a lot of opportunity to take advantage of an electric powertrain and have fun with an electric power sport. And they did it with that snowmobile, for sure. We're going to have a few videos hopefully tomorrow that I'm going to put together. We've been editing right now, but I'm going to have an article on Electrek and a few videos. You can see, like, doing a 0 to 60. That thing does 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. I don't think, like, we didn't have a V-Box or anything. We didn't test it exactly, but it was crazy fast, but the condition weren't right for a perfect 0 to 60, since the snow here melted a lot, so it compacted. So you're basically just riding on ice. So it wasn't ideal, but it was still a ton of fun. And the snowmobile also just looks cool. They managed to pack a 15 kilowatt hour pack in it. So the range is not anything great. Like, it's 100 kilometers, 62 miles. But that's in minus 30 Celsius degrees. So it's really designed to work well in very extreme cold climate. It will be great for, like, ski resorts. Those resorts normally have a few snowmobiles for the staff. And you already have the facility in place to just install charging up and down the mountain. So it's going to be a great opportunity for that. And just for people who would like to drive snowmobiles, because it's increase the fun by a factor of two at least, because you remove all the noise. Like, you can hear that snowmobile coming, like, miles away normally. This one, it's like when you're driving in an electric car in the parking lot and you surprise someone because they don't hear the car coming. Same thing with this. You can do the same thing, but with a full-size snowmobile, which is cool. Of course, there's still the noise of the chain on the snow and everything, but I think a lot of people are going to be pretty impressed with that vehicle. And it's done by a team of just 17 people out here in Montreal. It's sort of a spin-off, a little bit of McGill. A lot of people from the company came from the from McGill University in Montreal. They even have, like, the software guy is from Tesla and work on the Model 3. He came on board with the Taiga team to work on the on the snowmobile because they're making it. They said that they're very inspired by Tesla. First off, for the actual like design philosophy, because they started from scratch. They didn't take like a snowmobile and just converted it to electric. They built it from scratch in order to maintain a low weight, like the lowest weight as possible, because of course we know that when you go electric, normally weight can be an issue because of the batteries. But you have to be very careful with that with a snowmobile, because a snowmobile, of course, its terrain is snow, so you want to be as light as possible in order to just glide on it as much as possible. And they did that. I think like I have to check the spec sheet yet, but I think it's like something like 500 pounds, which is exactly a big difference from a regular snowmobile. And like I said, that's with a 15 kilowatt hour pack in that, which is pretty impressive. And yeah, what I was saying about the software is that they are really going with the software update. So just like a Tesla, you're going to be able to update with times and your snowmobile is going to improve. And you're going to even have not a touch screen, but a screen with very similar to the like a Tesla instrument cluster and everything. So it's really like a Tesla snowmobile, if you will.
A snowmobile is a winter item. Are they doing anything with the battery during the summer? Can you like use it as a battery backup for your home or anything?
That's a good question. That's why you should have been there. You could have that question. I didn't think to ask that question because it's a good idea since you mean use it like a stationary energy storage and
You said 15 kilowatt hours, right?
Yeah, that's a power wall.
A power wall, right?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, I will tell them for sure. So you need like a vehicle to grid technology, like just a two-way bidirectional charger, and that makes sense, because you definitely don't see a lot of use from aside from a few months a year, and that's a big thing too, because snowmobiles, a big cost is maintenance, like as we know, EVs very low maintenance, so you want to take advantage of that very low maintenance and get as much as you can from the snowmobile, and that will be another way to do it, which is having more use of in the battery pack.
I'm not a hunter or anything, but I wonder if those would be better for hunters that use snowmobiles to go out and shoot for deer or whatever, since they're quieter and you can't hear them like 10 miles away.
Yeah, hunting is already like pretty difficult in the summers.
Right.
So it's not that popular in the winter, but maybe like in Alaska or something up north in Quebec when they're hunting for caribou. But you're bringing a big machine into the nature, and you want to experience it as best as possible. And a loud, polluting engine is not the best case at all. That's the best case, the fully electric option. And it looks like Tega is going to be first to market with it. And the price is not exactly crazy either. We're talking about $15,000, which is on the expensive side for a snowmobile, but it's a performance of the snowmobile. For at that price, that's pretty reasonable. So yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I saw some preview video of you on it, and you guys out there are gonna really want to take a look at this. It's pretty awesome looking snowmobile.
Yeah, well, and I shot it next to my Tesla too, because like they said, the guys were pretty inspired by Tesla, so we got a few shots with the Tesla. Looks very cool, and a few shots of it working. And that's gonna be up on electric tomorrow, probably, most likely.
If your Macintosh doesn't crash.
Yeah, I've been some difficulty as editing the video so far. But it's going to work. Going to make it work. Don't worry. But that wasn't the only electric vehicle that was unveiled this week. Well, unveiled. Like, we already seen those cars, like the Jaguar I-Pace I'm talking about right now. We've seen the Jaguar a few times. But this week was the global unveiling of the production version. So they are starting production. Now we see the final design. And to be fair, it's pretty close to the concept, right? Like, I don't know if you were you as impressed as me for the concept.
I honestly, the outside of the I-Pace looks solid for sure, not like crazy anyway. But I think a lot of people that don't like Tesla interiors I actually don't mind the Tesla interior, but people who like the more classic version of an interior will like the Jaguar I-Pace. And a lot of people who say, well, you know, I just dropped $70,000 on a car. I want a less Spartan, more full-featured interior, you know, more traditional and whatever.
You're going to get that with the I-Pace for sure.
Yeah, so for me, the interior is kind of the bigger draw.
And that's the thing. The interior, too, is it's fairly close to the concept that they unveil. You can check on Electric right now if you go with the I-Pace. We posted a bunch of pictures. It's pretty close to what they unveiled in concept last year. And it's a big update for Jaguar in general. Like, Jaguar has a very specific design philosophy for the interior of their cars and the exterior too, with the long bonnet and everything. But it doesn't look like your usual Jaguar, I think. Like, they went a bit different with Electric for their first electric car, because that's their first electric car.
They still have the big grille at the front, which I thought was kind of what are you doing with that? Like, where's all the air going?
But it's pretty mesh, though. Like, it's closely meshed. It doesn't look like a regular grille either. Like,
right.
The mesh design in it, it's not almost look like it's closed. Like,
it depends on which view,
Everybody tried something different with their first electric cars for the grille. Like, Tesla had the nose cone thing, like, and not appreciated by everyone either. So,
right.
We're going to let that one slide, I think. But in terms of specs, so no big surprise for the production specs. Still a little bit of confusion around the actual range, but the battery pack is 90 kilowatt hours. So they have confirmed that for a while now. It's a dual motor, all version of dual motor. But what that enables in terms of range, they said they were talking about 240 miles during the unveiling. Previously, they've talked about 250, but they said the EPA was 220 miles. So
that's interesting to me, because a 90 kilowatt Model X, the range, much bigger car, the range is supposedly about 150 or 255 or something, 256. So
I don't know for sure. Well, so you have one, you should know.
I know. When I started up. I believe
but
I
what,
get.
What do you? So you're talking EPA, or you're talking what you get? You're getting for range right now.
Oh, what I get is way lower, but I'm just saying EPA is like 260 for the Model X 90 D. So it's strange that what appears to be a much smaller vehicle with the same size battery gets a shorter EPA range. Although,
well, it's not official yet, so maybe we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But that's. Excuse me, that's what they themselves said was the estimate. So,
right, they don't usually underestimate.
They won't. One thing that we did learn, though we already had a pretty good idea, is the price. So Jaguar hasn't really officially released the price, at least for all markets, but you can order the car in the UK right now, and through their retailers, and so the retailers release the prices, but all the official prices per markets are going to be unveiled next week at the car's official debut in Geneva, because this week the unveiling was they were trying a new thing. It was just a digital unveiling live on the internet, and the actual location was their manufacturer facility, the factory in Austria, in Graz, I think.
Who owns Jaguar these days? I know Ford did for a while.
It's Tata.
And then Tata, the Indian company.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's with Land Rover, too.
Right.
But so the prices in the UK starting at £63,000, which is the equivalent of $87,000 US, but I think that includes the local taxes,
the VAT.
The VAT taxes. So again, we're not entirely sure. We're gonna have a way better idea of this next week, but I sure hope that it does include the taxes, because otherwise it's pretty expensive. Like, it's starting a price higher than the Model X, even though it's a much smaller vehicle. And we've been talking a lot about the Model X, and it's not our fault, because Jaguar themselves tried to position the vehicle as a Model X competitor. And why do we know that? Is because during the unveiling event, they released they had a little prearranged drag race between the Jaguar and two different Model X's, and of course the Jaguar won. But our main problem with that is the fact that, like we said a few times before, it's not really in the same category. It's the Model X is a much bigger car. I mean, I would, in comparison to the Model X, it's pretty much like a crossover at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the Model X seats 7. It's got an extra row. It's pretty, you know, it's, I think it's
higher. It's much higher. It's right. Much longer. It's
gets
much
the wider. Hummer tax.
Yeah, it's much heavier, so it gets the armor tax, yeah.
Right, so it's a different class of car. But, you know, if 0 to 60 is your number one thing, and you want to spend less than a P100D, then...
Well, you want a smaller car, too. Plenty of people want a smaller car.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's only two. They're calling it an SUV, so there's only two all-electric SUVs. So that's why they directly went against the Model X. But like I wrote in our article about that, about the comparison with the Model X, I have a problem with that. Like every new EV that comes out, of course we are comparing it to other EVs because it's the same point, especially when in regards to the powertrain and it's like that. But when it's trying to market the vehicle to customers. Now they went directly against Tesla. I don't think that's a good strategy. I think when you release a new electric vehicle, especially for legacy automakers that have already a lineup of gas-powered cars, and from an automaker that claims that they're going all electric and they want to phase out the internal combustion engine, just like Jaguar is claiming they want to do, then you should be trying to convince gas-powered cars buyers, like the petrol heads and people like that, to go electric. Instead, they're just trying to steal market share from Tesla. What Tesla was trying to do is just convert petrol heads to electric propulsion, which I think it's the thing to do.
Yeah, so, I mean, what would be a good car to compare this to? Like a BMW X3? Or
X3, yeah. I think the X3, though maybe it might be just a little bit smaller. And though it's also half the price.
Right.
How much did the X3 start? Like, I assume, I think it starts like 40,000 maybe? 45?
42,650 is the MSRP.
Yeah, so I understand why they went with the Model X, because it's very hard to compare it to anything else because it's all electric and they haven't managed to have a reasonable price for it. Because if you remove the price, it looks like what Tesla wants to do with the Model Y, right? Like a smaller SUV,
yeah,
cheaper, but though much cheaper than it is compared to the Model X right now. Tesla is going like for $45,000.
And timing-wise, it sounds like Tesla's about to talk about the Model Y for the first time, besides giving it a name and some, you know, other small hints. Yeah. So people who would be buying this I-Pace may be given some other options.
Yeah, it will be good timing from Tesla to just unveil the car right now and take reservation and just trying to steal some momentum from them, like they're trying to do with the Model X. But that's like why I was excited about the Jaguar. I thought it was going to convert some Jaguar fans to electric. And instead, they're just trying to stop Tesla from eroding on their market,
right.
which is an understandable strategy, of course, because you know, it's a company, they're profit-oriented and they want to make money. But and they also have to do it, I think, because of the price. Because if that car was coming in at like $50,000 or something, that'd be a completely different business. Then they will go with for the X3 and other cars in the same segment, because that's where the market is. There's a lot more people. So that's the other question: how many can they build? We don't know for sure. They're certainly going for mass production, and doesn't look like it's going to be a compliance car. But Is it a $50,000 vehicle, a 50,000 unit vehicle program, or is it a 100,000 unit vehicle program?
I mean, where are they sourcing the batteries? I know they're the packet batteries instead of the cells.
Yeah, they have pouch cells.
Right.
That's a good question. I'd put my money somewhere, I'd put it on LG.
LG, yeah. That'll be interesting. I mean, you know, LG is having problems getting enough cells and packs to GM and Hyundai. So it'll be interesting to see if, I guess if they're selling $70,000, $80,000 cars.
Yeah, speaking about that, that'll be a good little segue into the Bosch news. How do you pronounce that, Bosch?
Bosch in the U.S.
Bosch, okay. Bosch, which is a big tier one supplier for the auto industry. And they've been teasing us about a huge investment into battery cells. And just like we just discussed, there's a big supply problem right now with the battery cell for the, at least automotive grade battery cells for the electric vehicles. And Bosch was talking about a 20 billion euro investment into achieving a 200 gigawatt hour annual production of battery cell, which would make them, right now, the biggest cell supplier for the auto industry. By that time, they would have achieved the 200 gigawatt hour. Probably wouldn't be, but just the investment alone would have changed the industry in a big way. Like, it would have shook up the industry, and LG, Panasonic, Tesla, and the Chinese manufacturers, they all would have to take notice and probably adjust their own investment program into more production. But they don't have to, because Bosch didn't do anything. They were teasing that for a few months now, and they said they were going to take a decision about the investment. So it looked like the investment program was ready, and they just need the board's approval to go ahead with it. But it's a lot of money, and the board said no. And this week, they even released a whole press release about taking that decision and the background behind it. And basically what they said it was too risky for them. They feel like they prefer to have an expertise in the battery pack and just an understanding in battery cells in order to choose the best battery cells to put into battery packs and sell that battery packs to companies.
So, I mean, that's the PR spin, is that it was a high risk. And I guess, that is a factor. But do you think that their technology just wasn't as good as LG, Samsung, Panasonic? Or do you think that...
Well, we don't know much about their technology. They were doing a two-way strategy with both traditional lithium-ion battery cells. And, of course, they were the more publicized in that investment into solid-state batteries.
Right, they bought the CO or whatever.
Yeah, so CO was those things are all closed up. Like, we never had a prototype cells to test, so we don't know for sure. But they were claiming like really big things. So they were claiming record breaking energy density, the good cycles. Of course, solid state can have also very fast charging. So all great things, but the. So it's plenty of other startups claim the same thing for solid states, and the problem has always been bringing that cell to production at a reasonable price, and no one has done that yet. Bosch was seen probably as a leader in the space, so that was a big news because of that this week. Because
that's kind of disappointing. Do you think they'll spin off or sell their?
They said
battery?
They're gonna sell. They're gonna sell the startup. Like they were operating CO as a subsidiary,
uh-huh.
And they're just gonna sell it. So they don't want anything to do with it, and they're gonna dissolve their lithium ion subsidiary. So that's probably an indication, like you said, or they're behind in the technology. If they are, that's definitely an indication. If they don't even want to sell the IP from it, or But dissolve can mean a few things, though. They can probably just take the people working on it and the chemist and the electrical engineer and the battery expert, and just bring it to a more, because they said they want to retain an expertise in battery cell just to build battery packs around it. So you're still going to need those people around.
Yeah, we should also note that Bosch makes, like, I think probably the most popular e-bike powertrain. And like almost all the bikes from like Trek and the big biking companies come with a Bosch bike engine, and they just, that's what they do. They just sell the electric bike engine and controller and battery, which will be outsourced, as a piece for Trek, and Trek installs that on their bikes, and they're quite nice. They're a little bit loud. I think another company called Bros, another German company that came out of the seat motor space, makes a little bit better of a ride kind of engine. And there's, you know, Shimano's in the game, Yamaha's in the game. So there's a lot of stuff in the electric bike space right now. But I think as things stand right now, Bosch is probably the leader. So it's interesting to see them make that decision with that as a backdrop, knowing that they've got the at least their own internal divisions as possible customers. So they're turning that away. And also, I believe Bosch also has like an e-car, like end-to-end solution where they give you the powertrain and you do what you want with it.
Yeah, they're trying to be in pretty much in every significant electric component in a car. They're trying to have to basically own the powertrain. A few companies are doing that right now. They are really on board with electrification. But those are all, again, we were talking about risk, are all safer bet. It's already in their portfolio for gas-powered cars. So the battery cells, it's a lot of people are saying that it's becoming a commodity.
Yeah.
I'm 100% sure about that, but it certainly is. It is right now because of just the way lithium-ion just dominates everything, and it's basically just a few incremental change in the chemistry that's happening pretty much every year. But a lot of people are waiting for the next big thing. So what's going to be the big breakthrough batteries? The new technology is going to replace lithium-ion. And solid state, of course, is pretty much the number one contender.
Do you think when I remember maybe a year ago or a few months ago, Elon and I believe JB Straubel were talking about, they're talking about the Gigafactory, and they said, lithium ion is the only thing that's going to happen, except maybe there's one thing.
Yeah, they did mention one breakthrough, but they didn't explain, didn't elaborate on which one it was. It was around the same time that Goodenough, the guy that invented pretty much, wasn't one of the, he's credited as being one of the inventors of the lithium-ion battery, and he unveiled his own breakthrough for solid-state batteries. So maybe it was in reference to that, but no one didn't go further than that.
And there's been some breakthroughs in other areas of lithium-ion, like where they're much safer. You can you get the pouches and you can stab them and they don't explode.
Yeah, no one is seeing really an end to improvement right now for lithium-ion, so... It's raising the bar for the next breakthrough every year because lithium ion just keep getting better and
cheaper.
That's the big thing too. So like the next breakthrough battery, even though it's way better, it's maybe just gonna be able to make a very cool prototype of like an electric plane. But you don't, because you have like great energy density, super safe and everything. But you can produce it in oftentimes. Why you can produce it at a reasonable cost? Because you don't make a big investment into the production of it. So that's why it was exciting to see Bosch coming with
numbers.
Yeah, the big numbers. So if you put a 20 billion euros investment into solid-state batteries, you're probably going to be able to make the cheapest solid-state batteries on the market. That was like... the second setback in weeks for solid states. The other thing was Dyson, which is also developing a few electric cars, better known for vacuums, of course,
and fans.
Yeah, for sure. But they did pretty much the same thing as Bosch. They bought a seemingly good solid state startup, and were supposed to implement their technology into their products. But now what they said is that probably the first generation of their electric cars won't have that solid state. So they're going to resolve to using lithium ion again.
And don't forget about Fisker.
Fisker is the other way around, though. Now you see, it's coming in days. They're studying state technology. You're gonna have it in your phone by tomorrow.
It's right around the corner.
Yeah, would like to believe that, but Fisker has lost that benefit of the doubt for us for a while back. A few times, actually.
He makes beautiful cars, but
oh yeah, he's a great designer.
But
when you start suck puppeting on people's article about your products and things like that, that's where you lose me.
Right. So solid state's around, and of course Toyota has been talking about solid state as well.
Oh yeah, Toyota, Hyundai said that they have a pilot plant right now producing them. So it's probably gonna come. It's just when and Toyota and Hyundai are not like normally the ones that are gonna take the biggest risk, and they're already big automakers and everything. So that's why we thought Bosch maybe, but not this time.
Nope.
Speaking of Hyundai, they also unveiled a new electric car this week.
Another electric car.
Yeah, that's not their first one though, because of course they have the IONIQ Electric already on, and it has and similarly to the IONIQ, which is like a multi powertrain platform, they have like an hybrid on it, a plug-in hybrid on it, and the all-electric version. So the Kona is already calling it the compact SUV, pretty much a crossover, and they already have a gas-powered version on the market, and now they're bringing an all-electric version of it. But apparently the vehicle was designed from the start to be both electric and gas-powered, so it's not really like a compliance car or anything. It's supposedly better than that. And the specs are not bad. I mean, a 39 kilowatt-hour battery pack on it, and they claim you're going to get almost 200 miles on a single charge, about 186. That's for the base version. They're going to have two powertrain version. 39 kilowatt-hour, I think, is going to start in the low 30,000 mark. Again, they haven't released all the price per market, but supposedly it's going to be available in Europe or in Korea by the end of the year, so we're going to have a much better idea of it. But the production version was unveiled today. You also have 99 kilowatt for the 39 kilowatt hour for the battery pack on the burst version with a 99 kilowatt motor. Then the second powertrain version and a 64 kilowatt hour battery pack for around 300 miles of range. 300 miles of range. So that's probably their what do they call it? Not the NEDC, but the new one, the new world standard, which is supposedly better than NEDC. But
Hyundai seems to be doing really well with their efficiency. Like the IONIQ is still the one to beat. I think it's only like a 28 kilowatt hour battery that goes like 125 miles. And this, you know, compare this to the Jaguar. This is a 64 kilowatt hour battery pack going 292 miles. So significantly smaller, like two-thirds the size battery going 50, 60, 70 miles further.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy. Like,
yeah, it looks crazy, but we'll take all these numbers with a grain of salt because we are working with like a British company and a Korean company, and they all have different standard that they use, and they don't necessarily make it like easily accessible which estimate is based on which standard and everything. So, but what Seth says though is still correct. Hyundai is masterful right now with their efficiency for the electric powertrain, and probably it will show in the Kona too, since they said that they learned a lot from building the IONIQ and apply that to the Kona electric program right now. And like the IONIQ, one of the big advantages of the IONIQ is the price. It's one of the cheapest, relatively long range vehicle that you can buy right now. We reported a few weeks back though, and one of our 9to5 colleague Jordan is having some issue with his own. We haven't heard that much about right now. It's really just anecdotal evidence because Jordan did report that he found a few other reports of similar issue.
Right. Yeah. There's people on the IONIQ Facebook, IONIQ EV Facebook group who have had similar issues with the charging system doesn't seem to engage sometimes. So to plug it in and it just doesn't start charging.
He hasn't had his car in weeks now, a few weeks.
You know, I haven't checked up on it, but yeah. it had been weeks, and everybody's kind of scratching their head over there because the Ioniq is such a small volume, or the Ioniq EV is such a small volume car, especially in Toronto where he is, or anywhere outside of California, that the dealers, you know, they just
don't know about it.
They scratch their head and they say, well, you know, it works now, you know, whatever, they try it.
Be able to replicate the issue. Should be a popular car though in Ontario because of the $14,000 credit.
Yeah.
On top of already the cheap price, like it's pretty much a $20,000 Canadian dollar car.
Right, which is a really good price for that.
Yeah,
car.
Yeah, you get a lot of car for $20,000. Just for the same reason that the Bolt is pretty popular in Ontario there. I get a lot of messages for people, so if you guys are listening right now, I do get those messages. I don't respond to every one of them because there's just too much. A lot of people are worried right now because of the elections in Ontario. A lot of electric readers want to still have access to that $14,000 once the Model 3 it's the market in Canada. And look, I don't think Tesla's going to be able to do much even if they want to at this point. Though it's not even sure that... it's not even sure that the Conservative Party is going to go through, though it looks likely at this point. If it goes through, it's not even sure that they're going to remove it, though it also looks likely at this point. So it certainly doesn't look good. But that's in June, Ontario election, or in June, I think. I know the one in Quebec is in October, so generally it's a few months before. But Tesla did accelerate the introduction of the Model 3 in Canada. It's now... mid-2018, so maybe you're going to be able to have a few to squeeze a few in before they remove it if the Conservative Party goes through. But what we reported today is that even though you can buy it, you can at least go see it. It's going to be in store at Tesla store in Toronto and in Vancouver. They're going to bring it's there right now, actually. They have the Model 3 in display. You can sit in it and it's going to be the first opportunity for a lot of our reservation holder to see the car in person.
But that was a factor of the car being at a roadshow or something?
For the Toronto one, yeah, that was what Tesla says. They just brought the car from the show to the showroom. Mm-hmm. They also brought one to Vancouver. So it's really an expansion of the display fleet into Canada. The Montreal store didn't get one, unfortunately. But we already got to see some in Montreal since they did a lot of testing there. So there were two prototypes a few months ago. And then one of the prototypes has been seen a few other places in Quebec too, a few of the supercharger. There's one in Baie-Saint-Paul right now, a supercharger in Baie-Saint-Paul, which is pretty far out for Tesla's network. And it was spotted all the way there. So it looks like Tesla's done a lot of winter driving testing with the Model 3 in Canada and specifically in Quebec over the past few months. Speaking of the Model 3, also we learned this week what's the something special that first-day reservation holder get, like the gift that Tesla is giving to the first-day reservation holder for waiting in line.
It's a Matchbox car.
Yeah, die-cast officially. It's a die-cast, but it's not as cool as the diecast that you can buy online. I don't think you can buy a Model 3 online, but you can buy a Model S and X, and you know, you can operate them, like you can open the doors and then the interior is done too. We've seen a few pictures of the Model 3 one. It doesn't look like you can, the insides are done. It's just a diecast of the outside, but still a cool gift. A lot of people is going to be disappointed though if they were expecting like free supercharger and stuff like that. Though that pretty much went out the window once Tesla started deliveries and every Model 3 was on the paid program for the supercharger. Other things were like maybe a color. So we've seen a few signature red Model 3 prototypes in the past. So people thought maybe a special color to distinguish your car from, because that was something that he mentioned actually, you know, when he was talking about something special. He said something about you see the car and you know that's someone that waited in line to get it before it was even unveiled. But nope, that's not it, unless there's something else, because he did say and a few other things. But there was also the card. Do I have it here? No. The
maybe you'll get like a little hula dancer to put on your dashboard.
Wait, what?
A hula dancer to put on your dashboard.
Oh, hula dancer, like the Hawaiian dancer thing. Yeah.
They're quite popular.
First Model 3. Yeah, we also had the first Model 3 dual motor all-wheel drive was spotted in the wild. So a few weeks back, we reported on Tesla registering a new VIN numbers that were including the Model 3. So in a few weeks, there were a turnaround time between registering the new VIN with the dual motor and producing them in a few weeks, because now they've been seen in the wild. So those are still test vehicles, though, presumably testing the production process of the dual motor. But Tesla did say that they're going to release it in mid-2018, so pretty much any day now they could be opening the design studio for dual motor, which could be also, as we were speaking about Canada, we could match the timing of bringing the car in Canada, I think.
Yeah, you know, yeah, Canada's known to have some all-wheel drive necessity, so maybe that goes hand in hand.
Yeah. Speaking of that, though, I was earlier today I was in Mont-Tremblant. I said, and I was very impressed with just the rear-wheel drive of the Model S. I was on a road that was just basically ice. Like if I was walking on it, I was basically skating on it, and I had to slide down, and it was a hill, not a big hill, but maybe like a 5% grade or something, and I was just driving up and down like it was nothing. I was really impressed. Because I never owned a rear-wheel drive car before the Model S. And I wasn't too worried because, of course, I've been reporting on it for years now, and I had a pretty good idea of the performance. But I still get impressed today. Most a year after getting the car, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's been my my issue is like with my Model 3 is I'm not sure if I need to get the all-wheel drive or if I can just get by with rear-wheel drive.
Well, you still have your Model X for all along, so...
We have that, but it's only on a 3-year lease, so yeah. In 2 years it's going to be gone.
Yeah, but I guess if you get your Model 3 right now, rear-wheel drive, like in 3 years you're going to want something else. You're going to want right. the Roadster, you're going to have the Roadster now, and that's going to be all-wheel drive.
Model Y,
too. Right.
I don't think I'm just not going to be... I'm not a Roadster person. Like, just the insurance alone on that has to be insane.
No, we need to get each one and start a race series.
This is our weekly reminder to use our codes when buying your Tesla that we can all three of us have Roadsters to...
That's an idea, on. Though. Like there's the electric GD with the P100D, the Model S P100D. If we each get one, we could start our own GD with Roadsters, like... race championship with the Roadsters.
Yeah, we could just hire drivers because
you don't want to do it.
You know, like I'm fine going. You know, 250 is a little bit scary to me. Like,
what if the whole completely autonomous, and you do a race series?
Well, then without drivers, I don't need to be in the car. Then at that point,
yeah. We're not in the car. We're drinking beers on the side and just having our own cars with a home number on it and having to race them and see which.
That's kind of like those marble races because like, it has nothing to do with skill or anything.
Yeah. Well, actually, they wanted to do that with the Formula E. Yeah, before the Formula E, they had the electric autonomous car. They wanted the robot race that they wanted to race.
Yeah, they had the DARPA had that. That's actually what started a lot of the autonomy companies here.
Yeah, but they turned that into like an official championship that was supposed to run before each Formula E races. But they did a few like test run before a few races last year. But it was supposed to start, but I don't think they've started yet. It's Mexico next week, I think, and. I don't think we're going to see that in Mexico.
Yeah. So back to the Model 3 dual motor. We talked about this a little bit before, but for the most part, it's going to be the same. I think we've gotten reports that there's already a chamber where the new motor, you know, the front motor will go. Mm-hmm. So we're not expecting there to be a huge change in the frunk size.
Or not at all, actually. Probably not at all.
And then, you know, maybe the weight won't really go up that much because, you know, it's just the motor that's using the same battery. And, you know, it's the motor will be quite, you know, 100 pounds or something and wiring and stuff. But most of the weight in an electric car is the battery.
Yeah. This is going to have to, like, fine-tune the... normally, they try to optimize the front motor and the rear motor at different speeds so that you can increase the efficiency of the overall car, like having a front motor that's more optimized for highway driving, for example. So you switch the torque between each one in order to get greater range. So that's probably what they're doing right now, or they're probably already done maybe, and now they're just testing the manufacturing process and how it ends up in the car. But like we said a few weeks back, it looked like the non-owners invite to configure were coming soon. Now it looks like the invite to configure an all-wheel drive Model 3 is coming soon, I think.
Yeah, that seems like the next thing.
Yeah, maybe in a few podcasts we're going to be able to report that.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get a test drive of one of those. I wonder if that's going to be on the table.
Yeah.
I'd have to call our friends at Tesla to see if we can make that happen.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to go down to California relatively soon, right? There's a few things to line up. We have to raise the Tesla Semi.
Right.
That's coming. We're going to have to raise that. Also have to go down for the boring company drilling. But that I think that's going to be more like this summer, like in July or something like that.
There's also the Model Y announcement.
Model Y unveiling, which is April. No, I'm just kidding. We don't know that. We don't know anything. We don't know nothing. Yeah, that's pretty... weren't that many Model 3 news this week. There was another batch of invite that went out, I think, yesterday or the day before, though. Normally, it's like on the Wednesday, so the day before. Big batch came out, so check your Tesla account as usual, because emails are really not reliable right now. Haven't been for a while.
Yeah.
Moving on. Harley Davidson... We were speaking about snowmobiles making a lot of noises that are bothering us. Harley Davidson are pretty much known for the war of their motors. But now they're going electric. We reported a few weeks back that they confirmed that 2019 is going to be the year they launched their first electric vehicle after unveiling the Live Warrior concept 5 years ago.
Yeah, man, that was a long time ago.
Long time of just sitting on that concept and not doing much, but yeah, they're jump-starting their electric vehicle program by investing into Alta Motors.
Kickstarting.
What did I say?
You said jump-starting. Jump-starting? Which is like more like batteries, which is okay, but kickstarting is more of a motorcycle metaphor.
Yeah, you're right. You might remember Alta Motors because we reported on them a few times before. Originally reported on them because... Martin Heberhard and Mark Tarpening.
Why does that name sound familiar?
That name sounds familiar, except because they are one of the two original co-founders of Tesla Motors. Hmm. And of course, with a nasty breakup in 2008, 2009, that led to both of them leaving the company. And
So I don't know the history that well. I know Martin, he was the CEO. That was nasty, and he's the one who sued. But was the Mark Tarpening... the same thing, or were they kind of a team?
Wasn't as bad, I think, for Mark. They were a team, definitely, since they went together into Alta Motors. Well, they just invested around Alta Motors. I don't think they involved in the day-to-day or anything like that, by the way. I'm not trying to overstate their contribution to the company.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think Mark Tarpening left in 2011, I think. I might be mistaken, though. But yeah, if he left like 2 years after Martin, it's not that big of an issue. And of course, Martin's big deal is because he was demoted from CEO to was he chief technology officer for a while? Like I think he was demoted to just a more technical role for a while, but decided to leave after that.
And then they sued.
Yeah, pretty much pushed out. And then it was a big thing, like you said, the suit. And he started a blog. He started a blog about Elon Musk and about how he mistreated him in the company. Well, of course, Elon just—he was the one. He was the money guy. He invested a lot of money in it, and he was seeing he was seeing it coming that he was going to lose everything in Tesla because of the Roadster program was just not happening. delays after delays after delays. So he wanted a CEO that could fix it. And after two or three more CEOs in a year, he said that, fuck it, I'm going to do it.
Right. And yeah, we should give him a little bit more credit. He was doing a little bit of the direction, the strategy of the company.
It wasn't just the money guy. It was the right. money guy. So that was, I think, a big factor for him, because he didn't want to just lose all the assets that he had in the company.
Right. But he saved Tesla with his money. Yeah. On a number of occasions, probably.
But for sure, yeah, he was already a product architect and
right.
doing a lot of insight into the Roadster program. But now, coming back to Alto Motors, they've been doing, they've developed an electric powertrain for electric motorcycles. They haven't been as known as Zero Motorcycles, maybe, because mainly off-road vehicles, but they won a few races and everything. So they picked up a lot of momentum. And they've been recognized for the lightweight electric powertrain. So they use a small battery pack, just 5 kilowatt hour or so, and they keep the weight of their vehicle fairly light. And now Harley invested in a non-disclosed amount into the company, but they did say that the investment was linked to collaboration into developing their home vehicle, which is expected to come out as soon as next year. So not sure how much contribution they can do in just a few months in order to bring a vehicle to market, but there's going to be a lot to do, because I don't think I think Alto gets fewer than 100 miles of range or something like that. So they have to develop something else for the Harley. I don't think that's going to be acceptable for people used to the Harley Davidsons.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. Like, what is this duo going to come up with? I think maybe Harley, wants to use their battery management systems and maybe their technology, but their designs, I think Harley will probably stick to their in-house. Their LiveWire thing looked pretty cool.
Yeah, they could just release the LiveWire with a new powertrain. Of course, the LiveWire is going to go like 60 miles or something. But the look of it, I don't think anyone would complain about it.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy to me, though. Like, they had a concept, or they had a working prototype.
Working prototype. I'm thinking they had like 50 of them.
5 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, there's companies that are 2 years old that are producing, that more than, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And Harley's doing pretty poorly right now.
I saw some articles about it when they confirmed that they were working on one last week or the week before. And some journalists were saying, like, Harley Davidson is going to bring electric vehicles to the electric motorcycles to the masses. They're gonna make electric motorcycles mainstreams and things like that. Like, come on, like, Harley Davidson is a great motorcycle company, but you cannot credit them for making electric bikes mainstream or something.
No, they're going into electric motorcycles kicking and screaming.
They're late to market and they're not willing participant in that.
Right, they're doing it because they're going to get their backsides handed to them if they don't do it.
Yeah,
and they're already kind of in a little bit of trouble, I think. I don't know what Zero is selling, and I don't know, but I know that the cops like Zeros because they're quiet and they can sneak up on people. So, I know Harley sells a lot of bikes to cops, so that alone is probably worrying Harley Davidson.
Yeah, and everything's going electric anyway, so you have to do it at some point. I think we should address, I'm looking at the comments right now, and it seems like everybody is just talking about the same thing, which is the... where is the Model 3 production ramp up right now? And the truth of the matter is that we don't know. Like, a lot of people put a lot of money into the Bloomberg thing. But we told you guys a few weeks back that wasn't a good idea. We knew that they were going to revise that, and sure enough, they did this week and brought the weekly rate down to well below 1,000 units. And it just doesn't work well right now. Looking at the VINs, it works like if you just take out a few thousand units at the minimum, and even then you're not gonna get an exact, nothing close to an exact approximation of the number of Model 3 produced to date. This week they registered another 1,000 units with Nachita, and that's bring the total to over 12,000. But if they produced 8,000, I'd be very surprised at this point. Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it is nice that they registered over 1,000 new ones, and the high, I think, is 12,000, mid-12,000s.
But they haven't registered any in like 2 weeks before that, though.
Right.
So, like, another 1,000 in 2 weeks, that doesn't mean 500 a week. Maybe, we don't know. Like, before that, they did a jump of 3,000 a week or something like that. So, it's really difficult to tell right now. They're supposed to be at 2,500 by the end of the month. At least that was the last update. And the thing is, the people we know most about it are Tesla right now. But even them, I don't think they know exactly. Well, they know how many are they producing, like yesterday, how many they produced yesterday, how many they kind of produce today.
But they don't know when they're going to hit their numbers.
Yeah, they just don't know. They're all sending estimates. So that's why they're always like, they're using their words carefully when they release estimate. And you have to read between the lines sometimes. And, yeah, people, they're saying they're desperate. Yeah,
I mean, the good news for Tesla is that there's nothing comparable to the Model 3 at the price. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I know some people are like, well, I'll just go get a Chevy Bolt. And, you know, there are some.
Doesn't seem to be the case. Like I reported yesterday, no. Chevy released a number again for February. Right. And every time I say that, people come down on me, like saying that I'm being shitty to the Bolt and everything. It's not the point. I know that, I don't expect them to reach in February the same number that he did in December with all the tax credit boosts and everything like that. But still, you'd expect them to be at similar level as that they were like mid-years of last year when they were still in the production ramp-up. But no, they're down now to 14,000 units from highs of, again, 3,000 in December, but like more reasonable highs of over 2,000 units.
Yeah, why do you think they were down so hard? I know the tax is a factor, but what about the winter? Is that a factor?
Winter is a factor. Of course, you sell fewer cars in winter, but I would imagine that it's less of an impact for a vehicle like that. It's supposed to be in high demand. At least they're trying to lead us to believe that. And especially because of the Model 3, like right now it doesn't matter for the Model 3 that it's winter. Like if Tesla produces it, people will buy it. That's it. And Tesla is not producing it at $35,000. So I would imagine that a lot of people will just get tired of it and go with the $37,000. How much is the... 37,500, right? That's the base price.
The base price is 37,495, so it goes under 30,000 after the $7,500 tax credit.
And you're going to get that $7,500 tax credit too, while for the Model 3, if you're looking to have the base battery pack, you still have a chance to get it, I think. But I think you better, if you are budgeting your purchase, I think you better budget for the getting $3,500 tax credit instead of $7,500.
Yeah, it does seem like that $7,500 is going to run out pretty soon for Tesla. Yeah. If I had to guess, I would say Tesla hits that very early July.
That would make sense if they are trying to, but I think if it's July, they have to do like a big. They have to change their logistic and start shipping in Canada and start shipping the Model 3 I'm talking about in Canada and basically stop Model, because we're always talking about the Model S and X that with the news last week that Tesla was delaying of like 5 months delivery timeline for a new order of Model S and X in the US. But like I said at that time, the Model S and the X are just part of the equation right now. Model 3 is a thousand of units a month at least. Like, again, we don't know exactly the production rate, but it's certainly in the thousands a month. And it should be in the tens of thousands a month at some point in the first half of the year. So at that point, unless they are shipping everything to Canada instead of the U.S., I don't see them finding a way to not hit the 200,000 threshold in Q2. But it's not impossible. Maybe they just funnel everything to Canada and I get my car sooner than you.
Right.
Because that would happen. If we're both looking to get an all-wheel drive, for example, and you order it, you can only order it like in let's say in May or something like that, you can start ordering it. And Tesla decided, no, we're not going to ship it to the US because if we do, we lose a month of a full tax credit, then I get the car and you don't.
Right. So
that'd be weird.
So for you Model 3 owners out there, here's something that's annoying and kind of sad. You know how like it seems like it's going to be so awesome when you get the car? It is really awesome when you get the new Tesla, but after a while, it just becomes your car again. And yeah, I don't know if I can't speak for Fred, but like...
Yeah, well, you've been an owner for how long, Seth? You've been an owner for like five years. Been an owner for less than a year, and I still get excited when I get in the car. Okay. So,
I do too a little bit. And I went from Model S to Model X, and it's not quite as exciting in the Model X because it's more of a, you know, truck or something. But I'm just worried, like, I want that Model 3 experience to be the best because I know it's going to be fleeting and I'm going to be like, you know, I'm just like driving around in my Model 3 now.
Yeah.
At some point.
I think that might apply more to you than I think if you're a first time Tesla owner, you've been waiting for the Model 3 for at least 2 years. If you just count from the time that you place a reservation, but a lot of them have been waiting for it like for 5-6 years and just
sure.
even before it was called the Model 3 and it was still called the Model E, it was just called the what was it, the White Star or the Blue Star or before that
the code name.
Yeah. So there's a lot of them out there.
Right.
I know I was one of them until I had enough money to buy the Model S. So I think it's going to be pretty exciting for a lot of people.
No, I'm not saying it won't be exciting. It's just after a couple months, maybe a couple years.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's just your ride to work.
Or maybe it's going to ride itself to work.
You're going to be sleeping,
and you're going to be reading, and you're going to be watching a movie or something. That's MacGyver says Blue Stars. MacGyver. Yeah, I think that's right. White Star, I think, was a Model S.
Right.
You're right. So on that... Let's end the show for this week, and thanks a lot for listening. As usual, a special thanks to our Patreons supporters, that we're 200 of them. We've been stuck to just a little 200 for a while, guys. Like, please help us out. We need it. Just kidding. Do it if you can. If not, you're still cool with us. The podcast is still free, and maybe we even have we'll have sponsors maybe in the show, but only sponsors that I think give you guys a benefit too. Like, it's something that I think you, due to the fact that you like electric, you're gonna like the sponsors too, and maybe it gives you it's a benefit instead of just giving us your time listening into our spiels. But thanks again. See you next week, same time.
Take it easy.